Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Story We Carry in Our Bones, Irish History for Americans, by Julene Osborne McKnight, narrated by Julene Osborne McKnight. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you may hear references to visual elements present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Acknowledgements. The one way in which we Irish Americans have always been rich, even when we were scrabbling and starving, is in our families and our friendships. Early in our American immigration, we were accused of being far too clannish. I am guilty of that, still, and gladly. So thanks go to the following who helped me every step of the way. First, and always, to Thomas Glenn McKnight, my own Scots-Irishman, my Anam Cara, who made the meals and ate them with the computer between us and carried the cameras on countless shoots in the field and never tired of listening to me tell it, even when he was tired of listening to me tell it. My life would not have been my life without you. To my daughter, Mara Kate McKnight, who drew the gorgeous and complex Celtic illustrations and the whimsical sketches all throughout the book. To Sarah Nitro, PhD, History, my dear friend who read the book carefully, looking for any necessity for citations and for any historical contradictions. All mistakes are mine, but many corrections are hers. To DeSales University for giving me so many Irish travel opportunities and for too many additional blessings to count. Goramila Mahaget. To my agent, Natalia Aponte, with me through so many books. To my editor, Nina Cui, who strikes me as a master of detail. This is a quality I strive for and admire. And to Sally Boitnot, also at Pelican Publishing Company, who fielded all the forms and correspondence with such good humor. And of course, to Ireland. Is Mericanach Gaelga May, agus Brodul Asse, Brodul. Introduction. Diaspora. It's a lovely word with its sibilant S and its round vowels. It sounds like a long and leisurely journey, but for our Irish ancestors, it was anything but. Diaspora means the dispersion of any people from their traditional homeland. In the case of our Irish ancestors, they were heaved, chased, and starved out of the green hills of Ireland, then flung far and wide into an unwelcoming world. At various stages of our history, our ancestors ended up in France as fleeing warriors, in Barbados as captured slaves, in England as the starving homeless, in Australia as debtor deportees, and in Canada and the United States as the largest immigrant influx in our history. They arrived poor, starving, and uneducated, capable of hard work but unwelcome in most places of employment. Most of them arrived knowing full well that they would never again see their parents or relatives, never again see the soft sky and the sweet green fields of Ireland. Some saved what they could, a tune on an old fiddle, a story about an ancient member of the clan, a whispered tale about a banshee. Others, desperate to blend into their new surroundings, to lose the stigma of being an Irish immigrant, abandoned the old ways as fast as they could. They worked to get rid of the lovely but limiting brogue, told no stories of Ireland, spoke no words that might invoke their own strangeness. They got their children educated and moved up the American ladder. Sometimes their motto became, "We don't talk about that." At once open and friendly, secretive and select, they moved, as so many immigrants do, to eradicate their past, to become apple pie Americans. And yet, even so many generations down, something Irish survived. According to the 2010 census, 35 million Americans consider themselves to be of direct Irish ancestry. Add on those who consider themselves Scots-Irish American, and the number stands at 40 million, 8 times greater than the population of Ireland itself. There are decided congregations of these Irish in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Savannah, but the Irish are ubiquitous in America. We are the American diaspora. By now, we are a fascinating mixed bag, a 57 varieties ethnic group, Irish and Italian, Irish and Scots, Irish and African, Irish and Cherokee, Mohawk, Huron. We have become a quintessentially American world salad. But when asked to define our ancestry on a census or other form, we define ourselves as Irish. According to Professor Kevin Kenney of Boston College, we Irish Americans as an ethnic group are larger, better educated, and higher earning than any other ethnic group in the United States. We are proud of our success in the framework of American life, but we are also proud of our Irishness. Yet, oftentimes that pride is a little vague. Some of us trot it out on St. Patrick's Day, take it to the parade, wear all the green we can muster, drink a Guinness, and tell a little tale about a leprechaun. Some of us travel to Ireland, attend Irish festivals, and name our children Sean or Megan, Patrick or Caitlin. Quite a few of us research our family tree, discovering in the process the name of the coffin ship that bore our ancestors over, or the documents that indicate that someone in the family may have departed the homeland on the run. But we don't really know what that means. How do we fit into the great diorama of Irish history? What is the ancestry that we carry in our bones even now, even these many generations down the diaspora? This book is for us. It is not an academic tome that focuses on one battle or one hero or villain. It is not a sociological study. This book is the thing that all Irish Americans love most. It is a feast, a huge buffet celebration of our whole history, there and here, then and now, heroes and villains, music and stories, joys and sorrows. You can listen to it from beginning to end, or dip in again and again. You can focus on our stories, or our religions, on our battles there, or our battles here, on the wild characters who preceded us, or the immigrant characters who forged us a path in this new world. It has been my great privilege to spend my life teaching Irish history, myth, and literature, to study in Ireland, and to write Irish novels. I offer this book as my gift to my fellow Irish Americans. I hope that our story surprises and delights you, inspires you, and takes you on a journey home. It's a big story, brothers and sisters, and we are still telling it. Bel, O Yia, Arinobar. Bless, O God, the work. Part 1. Knock wood and light the pumpkin. Your ancient ancestors are closer than you think. Prehistoric Ireland. Megaliths and mystery. Ancient of Days. People were living in Ireland as early as 6,800 BC, dwelling on a heavily forested island inhabited by wild horses, wolves, and giant deer with 12-foot antler racks. These early folks used stone tools, farmed, hunted, and gathered. They lived in villages with both circular and rectangular houses. Before 3000 BC, earlier than the great pyramid builders of Egypt, they were erecting massive stone structures to honor their dead and celebrate the cosmos. More than 4,000 dolmens, stone arbors or doorways, and megaliths are evidence of a complex civilization that understood science, astronomy, history, and architecture. But who were they? Where did they come from and when? How did they garner their great body of knowledge? Were they the people now known as Celts? The truth is, we simply don't know. They are our most ancient ancestors, but they are shrouded in mystery. Along the Boyne River Valley in County Meath, Ireland, they left us numerous passage graves. Graves cut deep into the earth via long tunnels. Most astonishing are Newgrange, Nowth, and Douth. At Newgrange, a long, low passage leads to a central chamber roofed by a corbelled ceiling so perfectly constructed that no rain leaks into the chamber, even after 5,000 years. For generations, the ashes of the venerated dead commingled in a great bowl at the center of the chamber. Obviously, these were people with a highly developed concept of ancestry, of death and life, of passage to a world beyond this world, a passage that opened somewhere in the depths of the earth. The passage graves are astronomical marvels as well. The lintel above the doorway to Newgrange on the Boyne is perfectly aligned with the sun at winter solstice. For 15 minutes on that day, golden light inches, then streams down the long hallway, eventually illuminating the central chamber in its brief, lambent glow. So transcendent is this experience that people from all over the world book tickets years in advance, hoping for a cloudless, sunny day in Ireland. That last alone, a giant leap of faith. But winter solstice is not required for the full impact of the experience. Deep in the heart of the earth, in absolute silence and palpable darkness, it is possible to intuit the ancient heart of history. The Poelnabron Dolmen, or Hole of the Sorrows, on the Burren in County Clare. Originally, these doorways were used as burial chambers, backfilled with dirt and gravel and sometimes covered with grass, but centuries of wind and rain wore them open. When the Poelnabron Dolmen was excavated, it contained the remains of 22 people, 6 of them children, none over 40 years old, and many with arthritis, evidence that our ancient ancestors must have lived short, hard lives in this wind-swept, stony country. Dolmens exist everywhere in Ireland, in the midst of the cattle in farmers' fields, on hillsides and in hollows. Clearly, these ancestral people populated the entire island and believed in death as a passageway. Of course, many legends have arisen surrounding these doorways, including that to pass through them is to pass into the country of the little people, the other of Irish myth. But much more on those little folk later. Who came before? The mythology of prehistory. In the absence of anthropological data about the ancient people of Ireland, myth rushes in to fill the gap. According to the Lauer Gavala, the Book of Invasions, which was written down in the 8th century AD, there were 6 invasions of ancient Ireland. The people of Cheshire. According to the myth, Cheshire was a female leader whose entire race of people drowned, with the exception of Fintan, her consort, who survived as a falcon, eagle, hawk, or salmon, i.e., a shapeshifter. This shape-shifting motif runs through all of the mythological cycle of Irish stories. Disney's The Sword in the Stone, in which Merlin changes Arthur into a squirrel and a fish, is a perfect example of this ancient Celtic concept. Become another, and you will understand how another thinks. The Fomorians. Combine Pirates of the Caribbean with the Cyclops of Greek myth, and you have a relative idea of the Fomorians. They were raiders who lived on Tory Island, Tor Ri, Tower of the King, off the coast of Ireland, having survived, according to the legend, the Great Flood. The Fomorians are hideous monsters. Their secret weapon, Baylor of the One Eye, a hairy giant with an eye in the middle of his forehead, wields a vicious and deadly club. They were fond of raiding and kidnapping and are the stuff of mythological nightmares. The Partholon. According to the myth, they were a race of makers who created 10 lakes, 9 rivers, and 4 plains. They built the first guest house and dwelling, brewed beer, brought gold and cattle, and created a legal system. They were also the first to fight the aforementioned Fomorians. Unfortunately, the entire race of the Partholon were destroyed by a plague on the 1st of May, the date that would become the sacred Celtic feast of Beltania. The Nemedians. The awful fate of this supposedly gentle race was that they became tribute slaves of the Fomorians. Each November 1st, the sacred Celtic feast day of Samhain, or Celtic New Year, the Fomorians demanded 2/3 of all Nemedian produce, as well as 2/3 of their children as slaves. Eventually, the Nemedians revolted. Many were killed, and survivors fled for the continent. The Fir Bolg. Some versions of the myth have them arriving on August 1st, Lunasa, in the captured ships of their Greek slave masters, accompanied by Gauls and Dumoniae, Celtic tribesmen of France and Britain. The Fir Bolg settled in the west country of Connaught. The Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of the goddess Danu. These folk became the fabled little people of Ireland, and their gods became the gods of the early Celtic inhabitants of the island. Much more on them later. Eventually, around the year 500 BC, all these races were supposedly supplanted by the Milesians, an actual historical tribe of Iberian Celts from the northwest coast of Spain, at which point verifiable Irish history begins. The archaeological truth of that arrival, however, is much more complicated, as we will see. The far south of Ireland, at the Ring of Kerry, the Milesians supposedly landed at the Bay of Kenmare. Note the ancient ring fort at the center of the photo. Power over time, the little people of Ireland. Fado, fado, long, long ago, there lived in Ireland an ancient race of people who never grew sick, never grew old, and never died, for they held power over time. So begins the ancient myth of the Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of the goddess Danu. Small and exquisitely beautiful, both the men and women, the De Danann were nonetheless fully formed humanoid beings whose diminutive bodies gave off an unearthly glow, a radiant aura, variously depicted as blue, gold, or iridescent. Three legends explain the presence of these little people in Ireland. All say that they arrived on the 1st of May, Beltane, one of the ancient sacred holidays. The first has them arriving from Greece, the second from a wondrous city that disappeared beneath the sea in a great earthquake, evidently the legendary Atlantis, and the third from cloud ships that hovered above the island. Whatever the place of origin or mode of delivery, the little people never left. In time, they came to be known by a variety of names by the human inhabitants of the island. Anshi, the others, the little people, the shining folk, the fair folk, and the fairies. So they remain, even to this day. But do not think of them as leprechauns, for the little people of Ireland are much older, much wiser, and much more dangerous than that. According to the myth, there were people already on the island when the Tuatha De Danann arrived. The Fir Bolg, who lived in the west country of Connaught. But the Tuatha De Danann possessed Dreadacht, or magic. They defeated the Fir Bolg in the first battle of Moy Tira for control of the island, but their battle had a terrible price. Nuada, the chief of the Tuatha De Danann, lost his arm in the fight. By the laws of the De Danann, physical imperfection disqualified him from kingship. The tribe selected Bresh the Handsome, whose mother was a Donnan, but whose father was a Fomorian. Bresh turned out to be a disaster. First, he lacked generosity, a cardinal sin among the Tuatha De Danann, and later among the Irish. He did not provide for poets, musicians, and jesters, stinting them on beer and biscuits, which caused the poets to write the first satire against him. Satire by a poet in ancient Ireland was so dangerous that it could kill its victim or cause him to break out in boils. Worse, however, Bresh turned traitor and brought the one-eyed Balor and his piratical Fomorians down upon the Tuatha De Danann. The De Danann would have been defeated, but they were assisted by Lu, the son of the light. Young, handsome, and pure of heart, Lu was at once a carpenter, blacksmith, poet, harper, genealogist, hero, healer, and sorcerer. While he battled the Fomorians with his magical spear, the physicians of the Tuatha De Danann built for Nuada a magical silver arm, and he rejoined the fight. Together, Lu and Nuada defeated the Fomorians. Nuada was renamed king, known from that time forward as Nuada Ar Getlau, Silver Arm, and the mythical De Danann became, according to the ancient tales, the dominant race on the island until 500 BC. Triumvirates and Trinities. 3 was the sacred number in ancient Celtic Ireland. Many gods and rulers were tripartite, one reason why Ireland eventually Christianized so easily. More on that in part 2. Many artifacts display three-headed gods. We do not know the origin of this preoccupation with threes, but among our mythological little people, two early sets of rulers and the two most powerful god figures are, respectively, triumvirates and trinities. The myths tell us that the Tuatha De Danann were ruled for a time by a trilogy of brothers, Mac Cuil, Mac Cecht, and Mac Grenya. Though we know nothing of them as rulers, the next threesome of rulers were women, Ban Ba, Fod La, and Ariu. Ireland was equal opportunity for both gods and rulers. Ariu gave her name to the island, Era, Erin, Ireland. The goddesses of the Tuatha De Danann were particularly powerful in trinities. The light trinity of the Danann were the three goddesses Breed, Anu, and Dana. While Anu and Dana are referred to in the myths as the mothers of gods, Breed is the goddess of all the creative forces. Childbirth, mothers, ewes, fire, poetry, blacksmithing. Her feast day was Imbolc, February 1st. In the most fortunate of households, she left her footprints in the home from the hearth ashes. So powerful was the Breed archetype that she permuted into Christianity's Saint Bridget and actual early Christian saints such as Saint Bridget of Kildare are her namesakes. Irish legends say that she served as a midwife at the birth of Christ. Equally powerful, however, was the dark trinity of the Morrigu. Composed of three fearsome parts, the Morrigu's personalities are Maha, goddess of war, Banev, goddess of carrion, and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?